You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
My name is Dr. Jerry Perrone from the AIDS Research and Treatment Center of the Treasure Coast, and I'm here this morning with Dr. Jans Lundgren. And he's going to be talking about the recent data that he's presenting at the International AIDS Conference. Thank you for being here, Dr. Lundgren.
You're so welcome.
Can you tell us a little bit about your study and what your data showed?
So we wanted to see whether we could reproduce the findings that we saw recently in the DAD study in terms of whether certain antiretroviral drugs is associated with an excess risk of cardiovascular disease, and indeed, in a separate data set, we were able to reproduce the findings that we had in DAD, suggesting that there is an association between abacavir and an increased risk of cardiovascular disease.
Can you comment on the potential mechanism for the association with abacavir, and did you do any specific studies to look at this?
We already had established in the DAD study that that this association was, if it was real, was likely not due to the fact that abacavir is directly influencing the underlying atherosclerosis, but rather that the drug would increase propensity for already existing atherosclerosis to manifest itself clinically as a myocardial infarction. So in the SMART study, what we tried to pursue was whether the drug is associated with any altered levels of biomarkers. We had access in SMART to six different biomarkers that mimics inflammation and coagulation. And for two of the biomarkers that reflects inflammation, namely interleukin-6 and high-sensitivity CRP, they were higher in patients who was using abacavir as opposed to patients who was using other drugs. So that suggests that the drug has a pro-inflammatory potential, although we clearly need to do more research to further establish that such a link.
You know, one of the comments I hear from people after your original data was presented was a typical comment, something to the effect that, well, I take care of 1,000 patients and I have not seen an association with abacavir. Tell me about type 2 error and the fallacy of a statement like that.
Okay, that's an important comment, and I appreciate the question, because I think we need to all understand that if we want to examine these potential relatively rare events, we need to look at very large data sets in order to have enough power to really separate out what are associations, real associations, and whether in situations of lack of such association, whether that's due to the fact that you are studying too few patients. And the instance that you're mentioning here in the clinic, myocardial infarction, cardiovascular disease, is luckily still a relatively rare event in HIV patients due to the fact that many HIV patients are relatively young in cardiovascular terms. You know, in the background population, most of the cardiovascular disease we see is happening in patients in the 50s and 60s decade of life. And few HIV patients are still in that age range. Clearly, as people survive longer, luckily, because of antiretroviral treatment, we will see more cardiovascular disease just due to the fact that the HIV population is aging. So I think people may not have seen this if they just reflect back on their own patients, but really you need large group of patients to establish these associations.
You know, along those lines, pharma companies have whole divisions that deal with media and public relations to help mitigate potential bad news about their medications. Have you witnessed any examples of unfair characterization of the DAD data?
Oh, I wouldn't. I mean, I think that would be for others to make up their own mind about that. I mean, I'm very focused on making sure that people understand our results, and that's why I'm having this interview with you to communicate our results. What other people have, I mean, there's been all sorts of angles made to our data, but I mean, I don't want to really go into that.
Yeah, it's away from the science.
I think I'm trying to stay. What do you call it in the U.S.? Stay focused on the ball?
Right. Keep the eye on the ball.
There we go.
To your knowledge, are there any other observational data sets, any of the large observational groups that are trying to either verify or refute the findings of DAD?
As I understand it, my French colleagues are looking into a case control study within France, and then I'm assuming that there may be other study groups around the world that is looking into this as well. Of course, the issue here will be whether there is enough endpoints in those studies to really have the ability to confirm or refute the findings that we had. Mm-hmm. So I think that will be a challenge.
Sure. I know it was interesting that I happened to receive an email from Medscape talking about the Glaxo retrospective look back at their data showing that they did not find an association with the back of ear. But when you look at the confidence intervals of their data set, clearly it's underpowered to really show a significant difference. So I think it really underscores what you're saying.
I think that's probably right, yeah.
Do you think with the information at hand, this is enough information for clinicians to start changing their prescribing behaviors and patterns?
So the DAD study group already in February, when we released our own data, released a position statement that we felt that this data was sufficiently concerning that for patients with a high underlying risk on the back of ear, that it may be prudent to consider other drug options if such other drug options exist and would be considered more safe. So this would be in patients with high underlying risk. Based on the data I've seen so far, essentially the editorial in Lancet that accompanied our paper essentially was in agreement with that position. And I think that that position is still valid. And I think that's probably what we should continue to do. Mm-hmm. I would say for most patients, namely all those patients who is luckily at low risk of cardiovascular disease, this is not really something that I would say is clinically concerning. Mm-hmm. But for patients with high underlying risk, and the way to calculate that, as you know, is to do a Framingham risk calculation in individual patients, for those at high underlying risk, it may be prudent to consider other options. But we all know that antiretroviral treatment is a lifesaver. So don't go out here and play with this. Be very careful in your consideration and make sure that whatever options that you consider switching to indeed are considered more safe in your particular situation. And, of course, that depends on your treatment history and resistance and all sorts of different things.
And I think the good news is that now with all the new medications, there are certainly options for people that do need or want to switch off medication, like a back of ear or protease inhibitors for that matter as well.
So I think we're privileged at the moment. But, of course, we need to protect all our drugs because we will need them, at least in a population of patients. I think we'll need all of them to keep the continuous benefit of antiretroviral treatment in the future.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to the next installment of the DAD database, maybe next year, looking at protease inhibitors.
We'll do that. Thank you.
Okay.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on the 17th International AIDS Conference from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/AIDS2008.